morning. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl this last hour. Earl is off doing what Earl does so very well. Say, Sam, now that Earl's gone, think we can talk about him for this last hour?
I've been dying for this moment.
Little does he know, his ears can burn, you know. Actually, Earl does deserve to be talked about a little bit because he does some really spectacularly good things. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that the listeners out there understand what Earl does when he's not doing his radio show. But one of the things he's highly involved with, I mean, right now he's going to the graduation of his foster child, but that is a story unto itself. But skipping from that to Voice of the Elders, has he talked much about Voice of the Elders on the show?
I know that his big, I don't know if you want to call it like event or program is launching soon. He's mentioned it briefly, but nothing crazy.
Well, Voice of the Elders is all Earl. He generated the idea, and the idea is to get numbers of people, older guys, men particularly, who live in the city, most of them African American, to mentor young people, and to particularly mentor young people in the middle school ages who are at risk, highly at risk. And, you know, we all know in the Milwaukee area the huge problem we have with stolen cars, the danger that stolen cars present to the public at large, how ruinous it is to the kids who involve themselves in doing stolen cars, both in terms of the terrible injuries they have in automobile accidents, but also what it does to their futures based on establishing a criminal record and a path for their life that isn't positive. And Earl identified this, was able through all of his contacts to line up a large group of exceedingly energized and wise and able guys to serve as mentors. He's worked with the Milwaukee public schools. He's worked with the police. He's got a program up and going. They're meeting actively with young people, having an impact. And so it's a program that has a great deal of promise. And Earl has done this all himself, just much the same way when he set up a junior football program that at one point had thousands of participants in the city of Milwaukee. So I can't say enough about Earl and his energy and his inclinations and instincts, because they're all good. He's a remarkable guy. We're lucky to have him talking to the city. We're lucky to have him in the city. So, Earl, I hope you're listening. I congratulate you every day when I wake up. You're a great man. We were talking before he left so abruptly. And we were talking about the problems in American society right now and the extent to which people who want to identify and look at the problems in society might be viewed negatively by those who think that American exceptionalism is the rule of the day. In fact, Ted Cruz just a couple of weeks ago, I think, took great umbrage at someone who asked how it was that in a country that viewed itself as being so exceptional, this was a foreign reporter, would have so many murders of young children, would have situations like the Uvalde school situation occurring, and how could we possibly view that as part of an exceptional society? And he took great umbrage at that and said, I'm so sorry that you have a negative view of American exceptionalism, as if America was exceptional in all regards. And I think that's a problem. That's a serious social problem we have. That we, if we aren't willing to look at and try to figure out why this is going on, I've got a son who's a middle school teacher who has literally grieved ever since the Uvalde thing, because it seems so like such a futile issue to talk about. Like every couple of months, we have a similar circumstance. We've had literally hundreds and hundreds of school children killed in their schools. And we've had gun incidents with multiple killings. I mean, in 1 year, we have more killings in the United States with mass gun-based homicides, mass killings, than the world has in decades. And so is that a problem? Does that reflect some social problem we have in our country? It certainly does. And those who want to defend the NRA's position would assert that maybe the problems that create this are created by liberal thinking, by the woke, the so-called woke political approach, by I don't know what. It's gaslighting at the highest level to try and assert that the basis of the gun problem in the United States is not the fact that we have 400 million guns in the United States. I mean, that's the elephant in the room. We're the only country that has that much armament available to in society at large. We're the only country that has the, that kind of weaponry such that everybody on the street, 12-year-olds who want to carry a gun can find a gun and carry it and can buy one at some what must be an affordable price to them and can do so without any sort of background check. So lots of this political debate about passing laws that will somehow make it harder to buy guns ignores the fact that we have over 400 million guns. We have millions of assault rifles already in circulation in the country, already available to be bought on a person-to-person exchange that requires no background check. So if we're going to address the gun problem in the United States and the loss of life as the result of guns in the United States, don't we have to face the reality that it's the existence of guns and it's the existence of millions and millions of guns in the United States that is the basic problem? You know, we can talk about it being, we, you know, the NRA will say, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Well, people with guns kill people, and people with guns kill many people. You know, in Japan, when they have a mass murder, it's somebody with a knife who goes crazy and kills one or two people with a knife. In the United States, when we have someone who goes crazy, they'll kill 69 people in Las Vegas with a gun. So what's the difference there? Well, the difference is that crazy people in the United States have access to guns and can kill many, many people at once. Now, so, you know, guns. We can set guns aside maybe as an issue and say, okay, maybe guns are an issue that we should set aside and not include in the America is exceptional kind of view of the world. Although there are those on the conservative side who would say, well, America is exceptional because we have the Second Amendment and we have this right to bear arms in the United States that isn't available in other countries. Okay, but what's exceptional about that? You know, how does that create an exceptional value for the American people? We can jump to other subjects. We could jump to, for instance, healthcare. There are those who would say that we have an exceptional healthcare system because we can provide the most sophisticated kind of healthcare to in the world. And it is true that people from Saudi Arabia, people from all over the world with money will travel to the United States to get the most sophisticated kind of healthcare. But is that healthcare available to a middle-class worker, a 30-year-old waitress, a woman who's away on a wait staff that can't afford healthcare insurance, who doesn't qualify for Medicaid, who develops breast cancer? And how will it work out for her? And how available is the healthcare that's so sophisticated to a person without means? And what does that mean for American exceptionalism? Because is it exceptional because we have the healthcare available to the world? Or should our healthcare be measured as exceptional because it's available to everybody in this country who then gets the healthcare? Let's talk about childhood. Let's talk about entry to this world. We have a nation that is that argues a great deal about pro-life and abortion rights and family planning rights and the right of a woman to make a decision. These are hotly contested issues. But what about when the child is born? How hotly contested are the issues and how supportive are the people who are so pro-life? How supportive are they about the issue of taking care of that life once it enters once it starts in the United States. Because in Europe, a child born is born into a circumstance in which the important things for that child's health and welfare are taken care of for sure. That child will get child daycare. That child will get health care. That child will get educated through its entire life up to its adulthood without a concern about having substantial money in order to pay for it. All of those things are taken care of in Europe and supported, so that that child born has a birthright that provides it with a great deal of opportunity. What's the story in the United States? Well, first of all, we have one of the highest birth rate mortality rates in of all of the developed nations, because our healthcare system doesn't support young women giving birth in the same manner that it is supported in other countries. And then once that child is born, we have a child morbidity rate that is not the best in the world. And so we'll get back to this after a break. We're coming up on a break shortly, but I thought we'd unbundle a little bit some of what is so exceptional about America.